things first. I'm Jenna Wolf. It is great to have the Hall of Famer Chris Carter back in.
I got to turn the ringer off. I've been
gone for a long time.
Welcome back, man.
Good. Last handshake.
This is Nick Wright. As always, you had fun out at the Rose Bowl?
I did. Awesome time.
Yeah?
Yes. Man, you gone for 3 days. Jenna Wolf gets her identity stolen. Everything falls apart.
Infrastructure's crumbling.
Glad to have you back, brother.
Let me tell you something. Somebody's out there, whoever's got her identity, they're confused.
100%.
They thought they was getting Jenna Wolf. They had no clue.
They're like, I didn't steal 6 identities. What's happening here?
Good news is, so is she. Uh-huh. We got a big show today. Jason Garrett knows what it'll take to beat the Seattle Seahawks. Deshaun Watson is pumped up for his playoff debut. But why don't we start with the Pittsburgh Steelers, the story that keeps on giving, apparently, in their now offseason. As is customary, at the end of every NFL team's season, the head coach addresses the media. Mike Tomlin did just that yesterday, and while most of the questions should have been surrounding why this team missed the playoffs for the first time in 5 years, it was instead focused on why Antonio Brown missed Sunday's game. Tomlin telling the media that Brown had not, in fact, requested a trade after all. A lot of he said's from this one. Here's more from Coach Tomlin.
Obviously, we take his lack of communication, his lack of presence, particularly on Saturday prior to the game, to be something that's very significant. It will be handled appropriately. So I'm not going to speculate on trades and things of that nature. We haven't formally received a request in that regard. So I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to speculate in terms of where the discipline might go and things of that nature. Just know that it's going to be addressed, and it will be addressed and needs to be addressed for obvious reasons. And when we're talking about our darkest hour, okay, we're talking about playing to win a game and needing other dominoes to fall for us to be in the tournament and a guy not communicating, that is a real element of discussion.
Does it reach a point where it becomes more problematic than it's useful?
Certainly.
All right, so look, he's upset, clearly. He called it an element of discussion, but what it was he knows that that's in some way affected what happened on Sunday with the Steelers. What is your reaction to what Mike Tomlin had to say, CC?
Well, ultimately, I believe this is going to be a significant moment in Mike Tomlin's career. I mean, he's got a tremendous credibility coming into this season, but it seems as if the longer we go, the more credibility Mike Tomlin is losing. I have a huge problem with Antonio having his agent call the coach, okay? Because, for one, the agent doesn't have a relationship with the coach the way the athlete does. So anytime you have your agent do your dirty work, and I know this from the coaches that I experienced this with, Buddy Ryan and Dennis Green. He used to always say, don't have your agent call me. So whatever you want, you're going to have a better chance of getting it accomplished if you call me. So my first thing was with how everything transpired, that the reason why there was such a lack of communication, and they forced Mike Tomlin and Buddy Ryan in one of the lowest moments of my career when he decided to release me. He also put the media on a wild goose chase to not let them know what actually happened. Dennis Green, he used to always say, now, I will protect you until I can't protect you. So for me, this was Mike Tomlin where he said, I've been protecting him, and this is what coaches do. I've been protecting him. I've been protecting this guy. I've been protecting him, and now I can't protect him. So he gave us some insight into what transpired to them having to suspend Antonio before Sunday's game. So Mike Tomlin in this, I believe everyone is going to be watching how he reacts. Now, I wouldn't overreact if I'm the coach and decide that I'm immediately going to trade him, because I'm not going to take that dead money and just say, you know something, I'm not going to have Super Bowl aspirations, because $20 million, it gives me the ability to have 4 or 5 other quality players. So I'm not going to overreact and say, yes, I'm going to trade him, but yes, I am going to do something. I believe this right here will be how Mike Tomlin is judged. Does he go on to be another 5-8 years with the Pittsburgh Steelers, or are we in the last days of Mike Tomlin? I believe based on what he's going to do, that's going to determine that.
Mike Tomlin, his best players continue to do him the dirtiest. Whether it's Le'Veon Bell simply not communicating with him, Le'Veon Bell has every right to do what he did with his contract, but to not pay Tomlin the respect of communicating with him, to put Tomlin in the humiliating position of having to tell everyone, I couldn't get a hold of him. That's one of his best players. Big Ben, whether it was 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, saying, I didn't like that play. I don't know why we're doing this. constantly questioning Tomlin, either himself or his coaching staff, undercutting him with the anthem. Big Ben this year calling into question teammates, which causes problems in the locker room. And now Antonio Brown, who Mike Tomlin for years has protected as far as when it was a big deal that AB kept getting
and a bunch of other players there.
Absolutely.
So let's not, I think sometimes that because of the star players, we always think that there's not other players with on the team with less talent that aren't getting some measure of protection. And that happens in every NBA locker room, every NFL locker room.
I totally agree. But I would argue that the best players and the most highly compensated players have the largest responsibility to pay it back to the coach. When someone calls a guy a player's coach, sometimes that's an insult. But typically what that means is he treats these men like men. And if you're going to be treated like that, you need to act accordingly. And so when Mike Tomlin repeatedly with Antonio Brown doesn't come down hard on him, gives him room to grow, because Antonio Brown is one of the best stories in the league. A sixth-round pick who was homeless as a kid, who's turned into one of the greatest receivers under 6 feet tall in the history of football. His workout regimen is legendary. People on the team still say he is the hardest-working guy in that locker room. Like, there are so many good things about Antonio Brown. But what he did this week to me is a sports betrayal. It's a playoff week for your team, and you are AWOL. You're a no-show, no-call. You don't no-show, no-call a part-time job. Like, you can't no-show, no-call the Pittsburgh Steelers in Week 17, and you put your coach, who's always had your back and to C's point, the back of probably everyone in that locker room, in an impossible position where now it's a referendum on him and his ability to lead. That's not right.
For years, we have just chalked up the behavior in Pittsburgh as, well, different families do different things. This is what they do. They have found a way to be successful, regardless of, forget these three players, but if you want to say multiple players on the team acting however they act, we say, well, that's just the way they do it. And they've been moderately successful. They've been to the playoffs, although this year they haven't. At what point do you say, okay, well, maybe it's time we do something that is actually going to change something, whether it is Roethlisberger or Mike Tomlin? Like, is this the point where you're at the risk of perhaps losing one of the best players on your team in the league? You say, okay, maybe he's not a bad coach, but maybe the message is getting lost somewhere along the way?
Well, they have to make some changes in Pittsburgh. It's based on, it's a results-oriented business. The Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the most talented teams. Here, as we discuss, we're discussing a coach's press conference about a disciplined player in week number 17. And also, you know something about that talented team? It's one of the best organizations. They got the best support from a scouting, from an ownership standpoint, not only from a fan base standpoint. They have all these things going about it. But you know something? We're in the most important part of the season. It's called the NFL playoffs. And they're not participating. And the reason why they're not participating is because their defense hadn't been good in big spots. They throw too many picks, Ben, in the red zone. And they didn't have enough depth offensively on the team to be an offensive-driven team. So there's a number of reasons, absent of the press conference, of why the Pittsburgh Steelers and why we should be talking about them moving forward. But until this is resolved, until they make an about face, until Mike Tomlin, he has to make some adjustments. And it's very, very hard to do because Ben Roethlisberger is used to the system that they have. AB has been coddled unto this point that now they have to make an adjustment. And typically, you can't make that adjustment inside an organization unless you fire the coach
right, and
bring in a new voice. I don't believe the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to do that, and I'm not certain that they're going to trade Antonio Brown.
You mentioned earlier the dead money with Antonio Brown, and yesterday I made the case as to why, to me, this is the point of no return, and I would trade Antonio Brown. I want people to fully understand what the cap ramifications are, because $21 million in dead money seems like a ton, and it is, but they need to understand if he's on the team, it's $22 million against the cap. So their cap, we can show it. This is the left column is if he's on your team, what your cap hit is. $22 million, $18 million, $19 million. The right column is if he were traded in an hour or later this week. It's $21 million this year, so it frees up no money essentially this year. And then obviously $0 2 years moving forward. So your cap situation for 2019 is the same. with or without Antonio Brown. The question is, can you replace the production?
Right.
And is removing what I think could be a Le'Veon Bell type of ongoing distraction throughout the offseason and into the season worth it? What would the compensation be? Could you get, if Amari Cooper's worth a one, could you get a one and a three, a one and a two? Their cap is going to be the same with or without him. They would just have a gaping hole at number one wide receiver. Could they plug that hole via free agency or the draft? And what would the locker room change be? Because the culture change would be firing the coach. They're not firing the coach. The culture change could be changing the quarterback. They're not changing the quarterback. So you are running out of ways to have some shock to the Steelers' culture.
So how do you do it? What can
number
you
one is I would be slow to make Juju Schuster
I know
a number
was.
One receiver.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, I mean, if you take L. Bell out of the lineup, you take A.B. out of the lineup, then you'll see what you have. And there's some other attributes that I need in a number one that he doesn't have yet. I'm not even going to go into them. But as far as A.B. and this team moving forward, it's a long way from September. So I'm not going to overreact. I'm glad I wasn't on TV the last few days. I'm not going to overreact. And I wouldn't be surprised if number 84 in September is running out for the Pittsburgh Steelers because the way the contract is situated, they got limited options. They could go all in 2019 and decide after that where they can get off the contract then with no hard ramifications from salary cap-wise. I would see that as a solution compared to trading the player, just overreacting based on what happened right now.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, we'll talk about teams that are actually in the postseason. Can the Eagles recreate their Super Bowl magic? Hear from Doug Peterson next on First Things First.
Let's talk about some people going to play some football.
We will. We're going to. We'll get to the Eagles playoff run in a second. But first, Valparaiso's Marcus Golder hits the half-court game winner against Illinois State.
Oh, wow.
The Redbirds. That's my brother George. He went to college, Illinois State, in a basketball scholarship.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I didn't know that. Valpo in the highlights for the first time since Bryce Drew. That's as good of a game winner as you get. A little Jerry West in the finals.
All right, on to the NBA. Sixers Suns. Joel Embiid pump fakes the three Eurosteps. How about that for the strong flush?
We haven't seen anyone do that. At that size, to be able to dribble and have that maneuverability around the paint, no, he's special.
Look at that. Euro step from the top of the key. Go get it, Joel.
All right, Lakers Thunder last night at the Staples Center. JaVale McGee not scared to defend the paint.
So he's there for
Jeremy Grant.
His rim protection, when he's in the right place, when JaVale, is locked in, which is not at all times, he can be very good at this. Around the rim on both sides. Catching oops and doing this is a very good play.
Celtics and T-Wolves last night. Watch it, Big Cat. Big yam. Boom.
Oh, no foul there.
No. Play on, they said.
Celtics look good without Kyrie.
They did. Scary Terry playing some big minutes.
Gordon Hayward coming back.
Right, off a bagel.
Who said, yes.
It's a good win for them.
All right, moving on to the Philadelphia Eagles. The road to repeating continues Sunday against the Chicago Bears. You know, it's funny if you think about it. Same quarterback as last season, same doubt from skeptics as last season, but a little more of a challenge this time around as the Eagles are the number 6 overall seed as opposed to being the 1 seed last year. 1 seed better than 6 seed. Doug Peterson spoke on his team's challenges entering the postseason.
It does give you a little, comfort knowing that we've kind of went through this grind and we're here now and we have to continue to grind and continue to work, but I don't think it's any easier. It's a different team again, different set of circumstances. We have to travel. If we're fortunate to win, we got to be on the road again, and it feels different, but the excitement is the same, and that's what I think the energy, feeds the building because of that.
All right, CC, if the Eagles are going to do this, if they're going to upset the Chicago Bears, how are they going to do it? What do they have to do?
Man, they have to try to somehow contain that front seven. And we always talk about Khalil Mack anytime you're talking about the Bears. But, man, he's just the beginning of their problems. The Eagles, we know as far as an offense, they like to do a lot of five outs. What are five outs? That means all their receivers, both their backs, if they have two backs in the game or three receivers, they all get out in the pattern, so they're only going with five-man protection. Not hard math, Nick, okay? I know they teach this at Syracuse. Five men out, you got five guys protecting, you got one quarterback.
That's all 11 people.
Now, Khalil Mack, they have double-teamed him all season. So how do you do that with Akeem Hicks and him destroying people, man, interior, Floyd on the outside, the speed that they have at linebacker? So for me, they're going to have the best offensive line play that's that they've had all season, because what the Bears do to you as far as their front seven, and immediately when you get on paper, when you're playing them, you know you have to double-team Khalil Mack. So you know you have problems. So how does Zach Ertz have that type of game? Because he's going to be limited. Either him or the running backs will be limited because of their ability to be able to help in pass protection. Because I can guarantee you this. They are not going into the game saying, you know something? We're going to single block Khalil Mack.
No,
because
chance.
If he does, he'll take over like he did in September when he was traded.
And so you mentioned the Eagles offensive line having to deal with the Bears front. I'm going to flip the sides of the ball, because if the Eagles are going to win this game, and Nick Foles is a great story, and if they win this game, he will continue to be a huge part of the story. But if they win this game, it's going to be because they are able to channel what got them their Super Bowl last year, which was excellent offensive line play complemented by spectacular defensive line and pass rush play. And that's what I'm going to be looking for the Eagles in this game. Can they make Mitch Trubisky feel uncomfortable from the start of the game? Can they get after him? All of a sudden, the last few weeks, you are seeing the Eagles defensive line play its best football of the year. Fletcher Cox coming off just his second career defensive player of the week award. You're seeing Michael Bennett play better. Those guys are going to have to wreak havoc. I think they're going to have to steal at least one extra possession right out of the hands of Mitch Trubisky. Either a strip sack, tipped ball that turns into an interception, because I think they are going to have incredible difficulty moving the ball on this Bears defense. This Bears defense is first in points, third in yards, first in yards per play, first in rush defense, first in turnovers. This is the best defense in football, so their defense is going to have to do their closest impersonation of that defense when they're on the field.
Eagles haven't faced a defense. They didn't face a defense like this on their run last year, did they, CC?
No,
like this Bears
absolutely.
Defense?
No. If you look at what they did, they barely got through the Falcons game. And there's the people were under the myth, because they didn't necessarily watch the details. They say, well, the Vikings defense, they were top ranked. Yeah, but the Vikings defense was coming off of 24 points and a miracle. But the Saints had scored 24 on them in the second half and 200 yards of offense. So it wasn't like the Vikings defense came into that game, NFC Championship, playing great football. They got exposed even more in that game. This is what I think is one of the deciding advantages for the Bears is, I've played in Soldier Field, regular season, and I've been fortunate enough to play there in the postseason. All right, we had the Fog Bowl there, Philadelphia. Last time they were in the playoffs, I think, in Chicago, I was on that team. Man, that crowd, because it's already a hard place to play. So what they went through last year, getting the bye and being able to play the Falcons at home, and I was at the NFC Championship, that crowd and that decisive home field advantage that they had in that, I know Soldier Field will be rocking. They've had a sensational, maybe the surprise season of anyone in the NFL. And that defense, imagine a Bears defense, elite defense, playing in a playoff game in Soldier Field. I believe that's going to be special.
And when I reference Nick Foles, here's one thing he hasn't done in this stretch of, he's won six consecutive elimination games for this team. He's yet to do it in even a semi-hostile environment. Last year, home playoff game, neutral site Super Bowl. This year, here's the stretch. At the Rams with a majority of Philly fans. Home for Houston and then at Washington. And if you watch that game, that turned into the link. They were chanting, "Fly Eagles, fly," in the concourses after the game. None of these games have been a true road environment, much less what C's talking about at Soldier Field. That's going to be a challenge for the Eagles offense, not just Nick Foles, as far as, do you have to go to a silent count? Forget all the different different things that the Bears can do to you. But if you go to a silent count and your offensive linemen don't have the added advantage of the get off, right?
Well, there is no option but to run an offense with the silent count.
Right.
So let's not act like they have another option.
So
right?
I shouldn't say if. When you go to the silent
count,
you are already at a disadvantage because you don't have the advantage of timing that offensive linemen typically do. That's something we've never seen the Nick Foles Eagles deal with. They didn't deal with it once in the postseason last year, haven't had to deal with it once in the run this year. That's something to watch as well.
Go ahead.
One thing, too, to watch is Matt Nagy. Watch out, because him and Doug Peterson are similar in a certain sense, but because they come from Andy Reid, but they utilize their personnel better. Chicago has so much more team speed on their offense. I want to watch how Nagy, in his first playoff experience, does he utilize that? Does he coach the same way against this Philadelphia defense? Is much improved, but I don't believe has the speed to be able to challenge what the Bears can do.
And that's what I was going to say, is that last year Doug Peterson spent a good portion of his time making this a very aggressive offense, taking chances with this offense, going for it on a lot of fourth downs in the red zone, and now you see a lot of what Matt
Nagy's easy to chance
well.
When you're playing at home.
Yeah, it's true. All right, got to take a break. Coming up, can Dak Prescott lead the Cowboys past the Seahawks on Saturday? That's next on First Things First. Time for us to go viral. Check this out. Young lady at the Bulls game last night going all out for the dunk contest. How cute.
I like that. What up, C? What?
I'm just
you putting your glasses on? You
just clean them.
Look at this. Little gymnast.
Little no-handed cartwheel into the split.
That's impressive, man. What do they call that, Jenna? You were, last time you did, Jenna once told us she was a gymnast. And then we found out the last time she did gymnastics, she was this girl's age.
Okay, but I still have it in me. I could do the backbend. I could do the no-handed cartwheel. I could maybe still
the no-handed cartwheel?
That's what she did.
You could do that.
I could work on it. I could do the one-handed cartwheel, faux show. I could do the two-handed cartwheel, definitely. Anyway, what she did was wonderful.
What she did was spectacular. Yeah.
Chargers, Ravens.
We're not doing Chargers, Ravens. We're doing Cowboys, Seahawks in a second. Jenna Wolf, on video tomorrow, no-handed cartwheel. Look for it, America.
Time for some stories to start your morning. Lord knows we need some. Yesterday, Giants GM Dave Gettleman held his end-of-the-season press conference. Gettleman didn't commit fully to Eli next season, but he spoke highly of him, saying, quote, he can still make NFL throws. He still got it. It's more lukewarm. CeCe, should the Giants bring back Eli for next season?
Well, I think the Giants should look at every option to try to improve every position on the team. And I like what Gettleman did yesterday. He didn't commit to Eli in 2019, so it makes it easier if they decide to make a decision. With that first-round pick, I would potentially be looking at a quarterback if there's not a guy there in free agency. If I believe I can improve the position, I'm going to do that.
If I'm the Giants, I am circling Dwayne Haskins' name if he comes out. I don't know that there's another quarterback that I've seen in college football, especially now that Herbert's going back, that would warrant a top 10 pick. My concern if I'm the Giants is that six might not be good enough to get Haskins. You might have to trade an additional first rounder to get him. But if you don't get Haskins, I don't know what the option is other than Eli. You want to go with Kyle LaLetta, assuming he's not going to incarcerated? I don't know what their option is at quarterback position other than Eli unless they can find a way to get Haskins.
All right, moving on. John Elway and the Broncos let go of their head coach, Vance Joseph, earlier this week. So their next coach will be the third in four seasons. And for the first time since the 70s, the Broncos have posted back-to-back losing seasons. Nick, how do you evaluate Elway's tenure as Broncos general manager?
It's very difficult because he's been to two Super Bowls and won one. Obviously has drafted some star players, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. But at the most important spot, the spot he played, it's been an abject disaster the entire time he's been there except for falling into Peyton Manning. So I think he said, you know, I am ultimately accountable for this, but then he held the coach accountable for it and firing Vance Joseph after 2 years. So he has to find a way to get this position at least kind of right. He hasn't even got it partially right since Peyton retired.
Yeah, I don't think they fell into Peyton Manning. And listening to what Peyton said, John Elway was instrumental in him coming there. because of the support that he thought that he was going to get from Elway. So John Elway was responsible for those two Super Bowl appearances, and that's part of the cachet that he has there besides his legendary record. I believe if he wasn't a friend of the family and now they're going through ownership changes, they would potentially be looking at removing Elway. Yes. But because he has a special relationship there, I believe it's beyond what he did on the football field, because he's done a lot in business, but his personal relationships there, I believe, is the glue that holds this relationship together.
All right, let's switch gears, turn to the NBA now. Last night, Anthony Davis was his usual awesome self, posted 34 points, grabbed 26 boards. However, the Pelicans still lost the game. They're now 4-16 on the road. After the game, Davis seemed extremely frustrated. Nick, what do you make of this?
Well, I mean, this is on the road of worst-case scenario for the Pelicans for this year, which is that Anthony Davis continues to play at a superstar near MVP level, and the team can't win. That's been the concern. Their only real path to keeping him was showing that they could build on the success they had last season, the success even once Boogie went down, and they have not shown any ability. In fact, they've regressed massively despite, 34-26 last night. And if you watch this game, see, they were getting beat in transition after made baskets. They weren't marking up defensively after made baskets. It was just a lack of effort by the guys around Anthony Davis. Yeah. This is very scary for the Pelicans.
There's two stories in this game. People in the NBA not surprised that they would struggle, don't have the depth, don't have a very good bench, knew they would miss Boogie Cousins. But also, what's going on in Brooklyn right now? If the playoffs started, Brooklyn Net, they would be playing in the playoffs. So yeah, Anthony Davis is mad because they're not winning. Yeah, that's one story. They're going to probably end up trading them. But what's going on in Brooklyn is also very, very special. Their pace, the way they play, man, this was, it was one-sided almost, the style. They made a big comeback at the end.
All right, the OKC Thunder were in LA to face the Lakers, who are still without LeBron. Lakers were up 4 to begin the fourth quarter, but they still came up short and lost 107-100. Lakers now 1-3 without LeBron James in the lineup. Nick, how concerning are the Lakers' struggles in the fourth quarter since he's been out?
The fourth quarter has been the issue for this team since LeBron's been out. The big story from last night for Laker fans, probably Kyle Kuzma leaving with that back injury, getting an MRI, but it's hard to evaluate how concerning that is until we know what the extent of the injury is. But with or without Kuzma, since LeBron's been out, here's what's happened to them in fourth quarters. First game against the Kings, they're up 1 going into the fourth. They lose the game by 11. Outscored by 12 in the fourth quarter. Against the Clippers, down 2 going into the fourth. They lose the game by 9, outscored by 11. This last night against OKC, up 4 going into the fourth. They lose the game by 7, outscored by 11 points. Their fourth quarter scoring margin, their losses, is minus 12, minus 11, minus 11. Last night, the Thunder went on a 23-7 run, despite in the midst of that run missing 10 consecutive shots. The Thunder did. So their fourth quarter struggles are real, and it's something we saw similar to this team early in the year. If you remember, when LeBron wasn't orchestrating everything in the fourth quarter, they couldn't close out games. So now they're an injured team with three of their top six rotation guys and LeBron, Rondo, and Kuzma out, and they're a team that can't close. That's concerning. It should be highly concerning.
Yeah, they couldn't score the basketball. And when LeBron is out of the lineup, even though Lonzo is a point guard, there's still a lack of some type of leadership or just getting the offense initiated. They couldn't get any stops either. Couldn't make any shots and couldn't give up any stops. So in that formula, you're going to struggle. But as you mentioned, the injuries. How well is this team going to play with those three rotational players? You talk about being out of the lineup. I don't expect them to be much better than what they were. If they had Kuzma in the fourth quarter and they struggled to score the basketball because he's their best offensive player absent of LeBron James, then I would be a little more concerned. Without Kuz there, without LeBron there, I expected them to lose this game. I didn't expect them to be winning it for three and a half quarters, though.
The fact that they were up 85-80 early in the fourth quarter was a surprise. And then it was a collapse. But a little context to this, we all know how incredibly flawed the Cavs were last year. In the regular season last year, 39 times the Cavs had a lead going into the fourth quarter. They were 39-0 in those games. The Lakers this year, 22 times they've had a lead going into the fourth quarter. They are 16-6 in those games. So the inability to hold on to these fourth quarter leads has been an issue. It's one of the reasons this team, instead of being 3-1 without LeBron, is 1-3 without LeBron. That, plus the injuries, plus how packed the West is, makes this, it's not panic, but it's highly concerning for the Lakers. And they got to see what that MRI is, because if Kuzma's out extended with no Rondo and no LeBron, all of a sudden this becomes a very under-talented team.
I told you when they took the MRI of LeBron, they don't take them MRIs for no reason. They're expensive, and typically when a team does that, they already know that potentially there might be more damage there. LeBron heard a pop. Kuzma, this one right here, as far as a young player in a back, man, that's not something you want to be on. So if I'm a Lakers fan, man, right now, not a good time.
All right, let's move back into football and talk some Dallas Cowboys. In a meaningless last game of the regular season, Dak Prescott was good. 4 touchdowns passes in a win over the Giants. If he could play 17 meaningless games against the Giants, he'd be money. Instead, he'll try to cap on that momentum as the Cowboys face the Seahawks Saturday night on Fox. Here's Jason Garrett on if Dak can build off last week's game.
Yeah, I do. But I do believe momentum is earned in life and in football. And you earn it by continuing doing the things the right way. And, you know, certainly a very good performance by Dak in our passing game the other day against the Giants. But you have to go earn it again. You have to earn it on the practice field, and you have to earn it throughout the next ball game.
All right, CC, Dak had a great, you know, week 17 game. What do you want to see from him now as they get ready to face Seattle?
Man, it's about winning. It's not about pitchers. It's not about being pretty. It's about winning and trying to play winning football. We know that Ezekiel Elliott is going to be a huge part. But for Dak, it's been a tale of two seasons. Before he had Amari Cooper, I think 180 yards passing. After that, around 70 more yards passing. So that's the Dak that we need to be able to see. They have to be throwing the ball for around 250 yards, and they don't want to throw the ball more than 40 times. So how can I have a limited number of attempts and still maximize that, because I need those big plays that I talked about? And based on the way Seattle plays, they typically play one high safety, either cover 3 or cover 1. A lot of that is a dream for a wide receiver, because typically you're going to get free access off the ball and be able to penetrate into the defense. Now, Seattle's defense has been playing much better, but to me, Dallas and their passing game going into the season, what was the question mark? Now we're in the playoffs. It is no different. They've practiced. They've improved on it, but now can they do it under the gun? That will be, if the Dallas Cowboys are going to win, they will not win by not throwing the ball and being efficient at throwing it.
I think I know your answer to this, because you and I talked when you weren't here, but the audience hasn't heard your opinion on what happened in week 17. So I just want to go back to that for a moment. I've been saying it was as meaningful of a, quote, meaningless game as I've seen, because the question mark has been Dak. He didn't have any all-pro offensive lineman, didn't have his all-pro running back, and the defense did not play well, and he went up and down the field. All of a sudden, Blake Jarwin is now something I guess Seattle has to pay some attention to. He makes a 4th-and-15 throw to potentially tie the game, and then the 2-point conversion play where he extends the play to end up winning the game. If momentum's a real thing in sports, Dak finally, for really the first time all year, has it at the exact right time. What was your takeaway from if Dak gained anything on this past Sunday playing the Giants?
Right. I must have watched the different game, because I didn't leave there thinking, wow, Dallas is going to be ready to roll into the playoffs. No, because unless they're getting the ball to Amari Cooper, Dak is doing what a quarterback's supposed to do. And there's a reason why they had him out there. It wasn't because they had a lot of faith in him.
It was because he needed the reps and needed absolutely.
Yeah, so momentum is real in sports, but some momentum is just false momentum. All right? I don't believe as a team without the offensive line, that offensive line has not played great. So what tells me that they're going to play great? And I don't think there's going to be a carryover, because you know something? If Dallas loses this game, what are we going to say? We don't care nothing about week number 17. It's about winning.
Of course. No, the point that I'm making is that the big question mark on the team all year has been lack of explosive plays. And the only reason the Cowboys are in the tier they're in instead of up a tier is because of questions with their passing attack. We know how good the defense can be. We know when healthy how good the offensive line can be. And Zeke has been a superstar from the first moment we saw him in the NFL. Right. It's been about questions about Dak, and in the beginning of the year, did they have a number one receiver? And then now his relationship and getting on the same page with Amari. I think that even if it's false belief, throwing for 380 yards and 4 touchdowns in your final regular season game is a step where he can say to himself, man, like, what did I do in the last playoff game? I was down double digits to Aaron Rodgers, and I orchestrated a comeback. Now, they couldn't finish it off, but it went field goal, field goal, field goal to end that game. I thought Dak played very well the last time he was in this position, a playoff game at home where they are are a slight favorite or a favorite. And so for the Cowboys, I think they can play with Seattle as long as the Dak Prescott-Russell Wilson matchup isn't a blowout. As long as – I don't think Dak needs to outplay Russell Wilson. But if he can keep that close, if that can be a lot of 10-9 rounds, then I think Zeke and the defense and the fact that they're at home can tilt this game in Dallas's favor. The problem for Dallas is I know Russell Wilson's going to play well. I can't remember the last time Russell Wilson didn't show up and play well in a playoff game. I know that if Seattle can't run the football, which they might have trouble against the Dallas front, Russell Wilson will find a way
right,
to make plays.
And the flip isn't necessarily
true. I don't
with
know that's true with Dak. I think Dak can have the confidence based on what he did this in the most his most recent picture.
Yeah.
But that's my concern for the Cowboys in this football.
The reason why I don't give it that amount of credit is because there's no pressure. You're in the playoffs. The coaches decide these guys can't play. All right, I'm going to play. I'm still a young player. Like, everything is still based on winning. So, for me, Dak Prescott has – we've seen these big games by Dak. And then what happened? The next week, what
– regress.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. So, that's on the board to be able to happen in this game. They have to be able to generate some big plays. Now, they have changed the offense up. They do have the tight end involved. Let's see if we can do that in the playoffs. Dak can't take sacks, all right? So, when you tell me Dak is not getting sacked, he's getting rid of the football compared to getting sacks, then I'll be like, okay, that's real momentum because he's learned. Because we know if you get sacked in the NFL, the chance of you scoring points are practically zero. So, you can't give away series by getting sacked. So, when Dak improves in that area, and then Chris Carter maybe will be on that bandwagon.
And then one note on the Dak taking sacks. Yes, the offensive line hasn't played up to the level of a couple years ago, but you sent me yesterday, I thought, a really interesting number, which is Dak, their Pro Football Focus sent out a stat about the most sacked quarterbacks where they did it to themselves, essentially, where the sack was on the quarterback. 15 of Dak's sacks this year were on him, according to Pro Football Focus. That's number one in football. Now, that still means there's about another 35 times he's been sacked that wasn't on him, but that's one a game. That's one drive a game that is totally stalled, or your opportunity to score a touchdown or points is almost entirely removed because Dak's either holding on the ball too long or rolling into pressure instead of rolling away from pressure.
Well, the Cowboys better hope they don't get too far behind. Otherwise, it does fall on Dak to try to get them back into it. Coming up, have we seen the end of Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh? We'll hear from Mike Tomlin ahead. This is First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Our guy, Coach Eric Mangini, is here.
Good to be here.
Good to see you.
Good
morning.
Great to have you. The Houston Texans have big weekend plans. They'll face division rival Indianapolis on Sunday. Many surprised they're even here, given the way they started their season, losing their first three games, but they bounced back to win 9 in a row, claim the AFC South, and finish the season 11-5. It's been quite a journey for this team and for Deshaun Watson, who missed all but 6 games last year. Here's more from the Texans quarterback.
Just look at the season, starting 0-3, you know, and then, you know, tacking on 9 and winning out, what, 10 of the last 12. I mean, it's everything we earned. We earned the right to be here. We earned the right to do it, you know, do what we did Sunday and be champs in the division. But, you know, it's a new year, new season, and, you know, we got to start over and try to be 1-0 this week and try to continue it. Played in a lot of big games before, you know, in college and stuff, but, I mean, you can't really, you know, pick college playoffs with the NFL. This is, you know, the hardest business, you know, top notch. It's a whole new season, whole new you know, speed of game. So it's going to be, you know, new for me, of course, because it's my first one, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Coach, it's a big stage for Deshaun Watson. Do you think this Texan team is getting the respect that it deserves after the season it had from around the league?
Well, the thing about respect, you remember the Mae West quote, if you have to tell people you're a lady, then you're not. And then if you ever have to ask for respect, then it's probably, you know, not merited. But in this case, I think they do merit respect. Now, they made it a little bit tougher on themselves by starting as big in the hole as they did and then really lost 2 out of the last 4 games. But they've also got to go into this game and they've got to establish that it's not going to be T.Y. Hilton's place. It's not going to be Andrew Luck being the best quarterback on the field. They've got to find a way to slow down that offense. They've got to do things differently than they have in the first 2 games in order for them to take that jump. And for Deshaun Watson, I think that he's going to produce a lot of things on the ground, But one thing he can't do is continue this sack trend that he's had all season. And look, saying that at this point in the playoffs, it's probably going to continue the way it has. Mm-hmm. But those sacks at some point, that's going to be the difference in the game. And he's got to make good decisions.
You mentioned T.Y. Hilton. People should understand there's basically no receiver in the NFL that plays better in a building than T.Y. Hilton does in Houston. Seven games in that stadium, NRG Stadium in Houston, 133 yards per game in those seven. The last two times he's played there, 199, nine catches for 199, five catches for 175, and two scores. One of those games was last year when the team wasn't good and Luck wasn't playing. He still showed up and dominated. They won in that building the year they only won two football games. Like, this is, the Colts have always had success against the Houston Texans, and T.Y. Hilton's been dominant against the Houston Texans. You mentioned that Deshaun Watson and the sacks, and we talked about earlier in the show, Dak Prescott, 15 of his sacks were on him, according to Pro Football Focus. 14 of Deshaun's were on him. Like, he not on the offensive line. But that also means, I mean, the guy was sacked 62 times. So that means 48 times this year there was nothing that quarterback could do, and it was either breakdown in protection or overpowering defensive linemen on offensive line. That's been the issue with the Texans all year, is their biggest weakness, the place they have the least money, the least draft capital, is their offensive line. And the Colts have shown you over these last 10 games, if you have a glaring weakness up front like that, they don't need Andrew Luck to be dominant to beat you. They can beat you defensively. They got the number one scoring defense in football over the last 10 weeks. They can beat you that way as well.
Yeah, there's a couple things that I want to watch in this game. T.Y. Hilton, the stats and stuff are great. We know about DeAndre Hopkins, his lack of notoriety, now starting to get that with the best sure-handed receiver that we have. Who are the others? Who are going to be the other players, either the tight ends or coming out of the backfield, to be able to help these players? Because whichever offense is able to help that star receiver, because I don't believe those star receivers, like Coach Mangini said, they're going to try to take those guys out of the game. So which other group can help support their superstar receiver? And I believe that Deshaun, his legs are going to be more important in this game, because I wouldn't sit back there in this game. This is not college. This is not Alabama. This is the NFL, and the more times you get sacks, the more drives are killed, the more possessions are lost, and then you start to feel the pressure. So once you get through that first half, the second half of the playoff games are totally different, because you know you got 30 minutes and you're getting ready to go on vacation. So those adjustments at halftime become more critical. So for me, if I'm Deshaun, right now it's about winning games and moving the sticks. And I would try to concentrate a little bit more on utilizing my legs in the playoffs, because that part NFL defenses are not ready for, and there's nothing more frustrating.
And with Pro Football Focus, I respect the work that they do, but it's not the be-all, end-all.
It's not a science.
And I'm sure if we talked to the coaching staff, they'd probably have a different number in terms of how many sacks he was responsible for versus the Pro Football Focus number. And besides that, there are times that the O-line is going to break down, but quarterbacks will see that and get rid of the ball. You can't just say, oh, it's his fault, I'm going to eat this sack, or I'm going to try to extend this play, when there's no chance to actually...
The force multipliers do something negative plays.
And it's the same thing with quarterbacks. Sometimes they throw a bad ball, and the good receivers, they knock it down so it can't get intercepted, and everybody plays a role in that. Now, Deshaun Watson, to me, was one of the most unique guys that I've ever seen with the football in his hand in college. I remember wondering how it was going to fit, how it was going to work in the NFL, but I knew what a problem he was going to create with his feet. And I think that's got to be a big part of what he does this weekend.
And where Deshaun deserves an enormous amount of credit, this last year during that outstanding run that he had, he did it despite turning the ball over nearly every game. The first six games of this year, he had an interception or two in every single game of the first six. In the last 10, 9 of 10 games, no picks. So maybe one of the reasons that the sack numbers are as high is he's not taking chances with the football. He is eating it more often. Now, you'd like it to be neither a sack nor an interception. But the one bugaboo with him, even during his great run last season, was a lot of turnovers. I think led the league in interceptions in that stretch, just had overwhelming touchdown numbers. During this stretch of great football by the Texans, he has taken care of the ball as well as any quarterback in the NFL. He's going to have to do that this week against the Colts, because one thing I don't think we can rely on for the Texans is some huge defensive plays up front, which is what they have made their money on defensively, because the Colts have been the best offensive line in the league the last 10 games of the year, only giving up 8 sacks.
See, there's no doubt he can play. There's no doubt if he the play breaks down, he can run. We all know that. But what do you say to a guy who's still a relatively young quarterback? He did miss a lot of last season. Getting ready for a big stage, his first playoff game. There's a lot of pressure around Houston for him to sort of save this team and get them back into the, you know, the real competitive talk of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's really hard for guys who come from college and are dual threat quarterbacks, because once they get into the league, they hear what the voices are saying. Oh, he'll never be a pocket. So what they do is they stay in the pocket too much. Dak Prescott is an example of that. Deshaun is an example of that. So in trying to become a pocket quarterback, they become stationary compared to being athletic. It's the playoffs. It's about winning, and I'm sure the coaching staffs will make sure that the young quarterbacks know that. Use your legs when you get an opportunity, because in these playoff games, man, additional first down, an additional drive, you get another look at that defense. It becomes so important to stay on the field. When I've experienced difficult defenses in the playoffs, it's because we couldn't move the chains. We couldn't get any type of momentum. So watch team momentum. Watch teams that are able to generate first downs to keep their momentum going, and which quarterback can make them little extra plays to give them an extra chance, I believe is going to be a huge storyline Saturday and Sunday.
And with Donovan McNabb, what it became later in his career is he would run the ball on third down in 2 minute in the red zone. In those critical situations, that's where he was more likely to run the ball. And I'd say the same thing with any quarterback that has that ability. If you're going to take those chances, take it in the most critical situations. They use that skill set in the red zone, in 2 minute, on third down, as opposed to first and 10, where maybe you're taking a hit or taking a sack, and when it's, you know, it's not quite the same return on investment.
But highest leverage situations.
Highest leverage situations, default to that if that's available. What it calls for, yeah.
All right, Coach, stick around. Take a break. Coming up, is Mike Tomlin handling the Antonio Brown situation the right way? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a Big Ten showdown on Fox as number 8 Michigan State hits the hardwood against conference foe Ohio State. Catch it all 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Back here with Coach Mangini. All right, Coach, things are getting interesting in Pittsburgh. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin addressed the media yesterday. A room full of inquiring minds asking about what in the world is happening with Antonio Brown. Did he ask to be traded? Reports are that he did. Tomlin said yesterday he didn't. A lot of he said, he saids from this story. Here's more now from head coach Mike Tomlin.
Obviously, we take his lack of communication, his lack of presence, particularly on Saturday prior to the game, to be something that's very significant. It will be handled appropriately. So I'm not going to speculate on trades and things of that nature. We haven't formally received a request in that regard. So I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to speculate in terms of where the discipline might go and things of that nature. Just know that it's going to be addressed. And it will be addressed and needs to be addressed for obvious reasons. When we're talking about our darkest hour, okay, we're talking about playing to win a game and needing other dominoes to fall for us to be in the tournament, and a guy not communicating, that is a real element of discussion.
Does it reach a point where it becomes more problematic than it's useful?
Certainly.
Coach, he sounds upset. He sounds like not the Mike Tomlin that we're sometimes used to, where he sweeps everything under the rug and things aren't a big deal. He sounds like this is a big deal.
Well, it's upsetting. How could it not be upsetting? You have one of your best players who not only doesn't show up but doesn't communicate, and you are playing for your playoff life and for the division, and that's a hard thing. Now, that being said, you know what you're getting into. Most of the time, you sign a contract extension. You're not tricked by people's
sometime in free agency, you can have some excuses.
Actually,
because you miss a little bit.
If they're not in the building and you don't have that firsthand knowledge, yeah, you can be fooled occasionally there. But this is a player that was in the building, and I'm sure there's probably way more to this story than what we're seeing right now. And if you want to live in that world and you're gonna commit big money to players that can be unpredictable at times, then you better be ready to live with unpredictability. And that's the world that the Steelers have lived in for a long time. And it's paid off for them quite a bit. It's not the world that I was from. It's not necessarily the world that I believe in. But other people have found a way to make that work. Now, that being said, you own what happens when it happens, because you went in to it with your eyes wide open.
But even by Steelers standards, this is an extreme circumstance. You guys both, Chris and you, Coach, talk about how the public doesn't understand how many, for lack of a better term, crazy guys are in an NFL locker room, and how many things happen in a locker room that is just maybe the general public would be shocked by, but for you guys, it's just kind of just part of going to a very unique office, right? And we were talking off the air about a guy who you just didn't know on any given day what guy you were getting as far as in the meeting room, as far as what his general demeanor was. That's one thing, and every team's got to deal with that. It's another thing when a guy goes AWOL. Like, that is not typical. That is not, there aren't a litany of examples of guys in what is essentially a playoff week of Antonio Brown's stature or of anyone's stature not showing up for a couple days, and then the agent calls the coach day of the game, hey, my guy's going to play. Like, even by the Steelers' standard of it's a different family with different relationships, this is an extreme enough circumstance where what would typically be our year-end press conference where we're addressing everything, they had a press conference where Tomlin was asked midway through the press conference a question about the middle linebacker position, and he flatly said, listen, we'll address all that later. We are here to address a particular circumstance, and it's the future of Antonio Brown and the recent history of Antonio Brown. And I just feel like Tomlin was put in an impossible spot where he had no choice but to not play AB on Sunday, right? We all agree there was no chance he could say, okay, when Rosenhaus texts him, all right, good, he'll be active. So he is put in a position where he can't play a guy. We saw what happened to their offense without him. Juju had a great year, but all of a sudden when Juju was getting AB's coverage, that offense grinded to a halt.
What would have happened, though, if they lost that game and the Ravens
and
lost?
The Ravens, that's
and
what,
he didn't play.
Right.
There would be a bunch of people saying, how could you not play Antonio Brown? How could you possibly put the rest of the organization and the rest of the team at such a disadvantage and not play that guy? But what I'm saying is if they had lost that game
and the Ravens had lost
and the Steelers were out, or you know, however it would have worked out.
Exactly right. If Baker had pulled off the upset and the Steelers had lost, so they would have been in with a win, and they lose 13-10 because they can't. Exactly. What is the narrative?
The world would be crying about, why didn't he play? How could you let this minor infraction or this misunderstanding push you out of the playoffs? And these things happen, and these things happen way more than is brought out publicly. And, you know, at this point, they've got a whole offseason to figure it out before they start the regular season.
Football players are like kids, and kids will push you as far as they feel like they can get away with as far as their parents. Now, Nick, you said that they put Mike Tomlin in a
impossible position.
Well, Mike Tomlin, in the way that he has led the team, allowed this to happen because he left the facility on Wednesday after a dispute with the star quarterback. Didn't come on Thursday. Now, to me, I played 16 years in the league, and I'm talking about, man, I did a lot of stuff. But it was never acceptable for me to miss work or any of my teammates to miss work. Now, a handful of times, there were examples. I'm talking about a handful. And I played with a bunch of rowdy, crazy. I'm talking about guys hung out all night. But there was not one day where it was acceptable for all of us not to be there. I was always taught to either come to work and report in, and I'll decide if we're going to send you home. So these things that Mike Tomlin has allowed to do, and the only reason why they're having that press conference, because the toothpaste got out and we was able to see it. The injury report was false, and he knew that ultimately the public was getting ready to know. So he tried to get ahead of this. So Mike Tomlin, and the way he's decided to manage the Pittsburgh Steelers, allows something like this to happen. Because as a coach, Dennis Green told me, listen, don't embarrass me. Don't put me in a position, because if you do, I will choose what's best for the team. I will not choose you. So Mike Tomlin, yeah, he's got to be soul searching, because to me, his career is in the balance. What kind of coach is he going to be? And to me, I believe this is going to be a watershed moment as far as how long he's going to be able to stay with the Steelers, or is 2019 that going to be the last year of the Steelers as we know it?
What about Antonio Brown? What do you think the future is within this organization for Antonio Brown?
Well, the future depends on what happens over the next few months. The future depends on Antonio's perspective. Does he come in? Does he have a sit-down with ownership, with Mike Tomlin? Do they get to a point where they actually understand how it got to this point? And being able to sit down at a table and say, okay, this is what happened. Why did it happen? How is it never going to happen again? And there'd be a real commitment to doing that and some honesty about how you got there. To me, then he's back. Now, if ownership has reached the point of no return, then it doesn't matter what he says. They're gonna push it off.
I remember one time when Randy Moss, him and I had messed up the schedule. We were getting ready to go to a playoff game. Not going to tell you which one. But Moss had messed up the schedule, and I had called him on the phone. He was going to get his haircut, and I was like, bro, we got a team meeting. He was like, man, I'm already at the barbershop. I'm already downtown. I was like, man, I'm going to the facility. I called Coach Green. Hey, man, Randy's going to be – and we were scrambling because he was going to be 10 or 15 minutes late. I have never been in any type of locker room where a guy wasn't here that we weren't concerned about his well-being and or we had to find out. So what they're doing in Pittsburgh is stuff that I have never seen in the NFL.
I want to ask you a question because you said something I've heard a lot of people say this week, which is, and it's a similar to one of the things you've said, which is if you're not coaching it, you're allowing it. Or am I misquoting that? Along those lines?
If you're not coaching, if you're either teaching it or tolerating.
Sure. And with Tomlin, you're saying he allowed this situation to come to pass. Once they paid Antonio Brown a second time, he had his rookie deal, got the big extension. They then gave him a second big extension. Where was the point where Mike Tomlin, what could he have done leading up to this? What could he have done? I mean, we wouldn't have, none of us thought that when Antonio threw the cooler last year, you bench him for a game. We all thought, listen, that's a fiery player, that happens. And you don't, and I remember you saying you don't penalize the other 52 guys. Like, but you can't take money from him.
That narrative right there, to me, is the problem. That's a fiery player, that happens.
Yeah, you have a video of that the next day, and you show it to the team, and you tell them, I'm not going to allow it. And it's not acceptable behavior.
The scouts will do that a lot of time in the meeting room. He's a little bit immature. He's a fiery player. He's competitive. All these euphemisms for this is a disruptive guy that's going to have to, you know, be handled in a different way.
But I mean, practically speaking, because I remember us talking about that the day after and the week after, and nobody thought you bench him. You have limited what you can fine a guy, and especially
what you
have
to do is, man, you have to be consistent before the team.
Okay.
The rules apply to everyone. And you have to be able to discipline guys, and you have to be able to chastise guys, superstar guys, in front of the other players. Okay. Because it lets the other players know that we're all on the same footy. Somewhere along the way, Mike Tomlin has allowed the Pittsburgh Steelers, not only A.B., Ben Roethlisberger, L. Bell, and a bunch of them. I got stories like Ryan Clark, but I decided not to utilize them the way Ryan used them in saying that they created this monster. Mike Tomlin has been a part of it. If you're the head coach, you should take some of the responsibility.
Can you change that? As the head coach, can you change the way your players see you if you've been there for so long, doing it one way for so long?
Look, if you're going to benefit from these types of players, then you also got to live with the downside of these types of players. And that's a decision that you make organizationally. That's a decision that you make in the draft room, in free agency. And you can manage it to some degree on a day-to-day basis. But there's a level of behavior that at some point doesn't make sense. And you bought into it.
Right.
You bought it.
All right, we got to take a break. Coach, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, is the Bears defense about to bring the Eagles' run to a crashing halt? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a big showdown in Dallas as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys in the NFC wildcard game. It all starts 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Every game this weekend looks awesome.
All right,
that's
we'll get to the Bears playoff run in a second. First, Valpo's Marcus Golder hits the half-court game winner against Illinois State.
I mean, that looks almost the exact same spot on the court Jerry West hit a shot to win a finals game back in the 60s. Valpo, it's a hell of a win against what Illinois State?
Yeah, I had a brother go there and play basketball. Yeah, we got a bunch of people, athletes in the family.
Ain't no big deal.
All right, on to the NBA. Sixers Suns, Joel Embiid.
Yeah, we're weird because we're good. Yeah, that would be weird to you.
Look at him go.
Euro step. That's a 7 foot 1 inch man doing a Euro step from the top of the key.
Oh, yeah. Now that's weird. 7'1" can shoot the three, and now I've added this to my game. That's why most people think he's going to be special.
Oh, man. Look at that.
Trevor Ariza now on the Wizards. Strong dunk. Not bad for a player in year 15.
Well, go ahead, old man. This is an old man dunk right here.
Yeah, it is.
This old man. He used to be a really good athlete. Now defensive specialist and three-point shooting specialist.
I mean, this took every last bit of his verticality to get up there. I hadn't seen that highlight. I like that.
Celtics, T-Wolves, Big Cat, bam. Big game.
All right, good for Big Cat on this play, but the story from this game is Gordon Hayward.
Oh, yes.
0 points in the previous night out. Last night goes for 35. First time as a Celtic, he's looked like Gordon Hayward.
I think
from
he heard your comments, bro, that he was washed up.
I never called him washed up.
A shell of himself.
I did say he's a shit, but it's not his fault. I didn't say he's washed up. Take
whose
a long time to come
it?
Off that injury. The yeah. injury's fault. There's something about auctions that makes shopping so much more fun. For sports fans, it probably has something to do with the competition and suspense that auctions provide. But who wants to spend time researching where their nearest auction house is and then make the trek all the way there? I definitely don't. And that's why I love Pristine Auction, an online sports auction house where you can buy and sell sports memorabilia from the comfort of your own home. Pristine Auction runs tons of different auction formats, including multiple weekly auctions, a premium monthly auction, as well as daily and 10-minute auctions. They guarantee the authenticity of all of their items, and everything you purchase comes from only the most trusted sources. And the best part, it's so affordable. I just saw an autographed Ricky Stenhouse Jr. photo that sold for only $6. Go check out Pristine Auction now. You'll be hooked. It's free to register, free to bid, and you only pay for the items you win. That's PristineAuction.com. And when you register, be sure to select First Things First Podcast from the drop-down menu in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Let them know we sent you. Make sure you select First Things First Podcast from the drop-down menu when you go to PristineAuction.com.
Time for your Subway Choice moment. The Chicago Bears went from worst to first this season behind one of the league's best defenses and the improvement of second-year quarterback Mitch Trubisky. The reward for making the playoffs for the first time in 8 years, for a 12-4 season, for being one of the hottest teams in the postseason, the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles. But according to Trubisky, the sky's the limit for Chicago.
Mindset, like we're just... We haven't gotten to our we haven't played our best football yet. So we're going to stay hungry, stay humble, continue to stick to the things that have got us here and just keep going this way. So we're just trying to get better this week, really hone in and focus on this opponent and take advantage of the great opportunity that's been given us, home playoff game in front of our amazing fans in the city of Chicago. So we're very excited and hopefully we just keep going up and keep playing good football and stick together and do what is now Bears football, which is what we've shown we can do this year.
All right, CeCe, how far do you think this Bears defense can carry Mitch Trubisky?
Man, they can carry him all the way. Atlanta, the Super Bowl's in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Last time the Bears were in the Super Bowl, I think it was a defensive-dominated team, not only good defensively, but creating more possessions and scoring on their defense, which led them to the Super Bowl, where they had Sexy Rex Grossman, as their quarterback. Mitch Trubisky is a better quarterback. He can do, not only with his arm, stronger, can throw to all parts of the field. Still a very, very young quarterback. People, let's not forget, I think he only started 13, 14 games in college. So him struggling in the NFL, to me, that wasn't foreign to me. People were, man, with that pick, is Chicago going to get their franchise quarterback? I believe that they did have it right. I believe also you just have to be patient. But it's about the others. And it's not, we know that defense is dominant. and they got a bunch of names, and they're going to make a lot of plays. But I believe this offense, Allen Robinson, bless you, and Anthony Miller, and their team of running backs, not only be able to run the ball between the tackles, but their ability to run it sideways with Cohen and the run pass options, I believe that is plenty enough. I believe we're not asking him not to wreck the car. I believe he's going to play a significant role in the Bears attacking this Eagles defense. I'm looking forward to watching him play. If you look at all 12 teams that we have, and we've talked about earlier, people like Dak, people like Deshaun, Russell Wilson, these guys being able to utilize their legs, there might not be a better athlete than Mitch Trubisky. Outside of Lamar Jackson with his speed, Mitch Trubisky is he's a better athlete probably than Dak Prescott, yes, definitely, but on the level with Russell and not as good as Deshaun Watson, who is a super-duper athlete, but that is the type of athletic ability Mitch Trubisky has.
I think people really haven't been watching the Bears this year. That's what I think. I think they've watched them on national TV, and on national TV you saw week one.
I think you're starting to listen to me when I say, I don't know if people are really, really aware. When you start looking at and breaking down the game.
And listen, this is a guy who one of my best friends works in Chicago and has been high on Trubisky all year, so I've had an extra eye on him in that regard. I also, as it turns out, have gambled on the Bears a bunch this year. I feel I've watched 14 of their 16 games in its entirety. But on national TV, what we've seen is week one, where the defense was great, Trubisky didn't play well, Rodgers executes the comeback. The dominant performance they had against the Rams. That wasn't national TV. The dominant performance against the Rams, where both quarterbacks, Goff and Trubisky, were horrible, and the defense dominated. And the other thing with Trubisky is, they spent the number two pick on him. And then after him was Mahomes, and after him was Watson. And they're like, they spent the number two pick on the third best quarterback. Trubisky has not been Rex Grossman. He has not been Trent Dilfer. He has not been a negative or just a passenger
Trent
on the team.
Put some respect on
Okay, I like Trent. I like Trent. He would say it himself. Like, he has not. This was the number eight scoring offense in football. He has 24 touchdowns and 12 picks and a 95 rating. Now, he is not the strength of their team. He's not even the strength of their offense. Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen, a real thunder and lightning running back combo to go along with kind of a poor man's version of the Chiefs as far as a lot of speed on the outside. They went out and got Taylor Gabriel. They signed Allen Robinson. They got the tight end Trey Burton from Philly. Like, they've put together a nice team. But the Bears have the ability to win a playoff game when the defense isn't dominant. That was not the case with the Ravens of the Ray Lewis Ravens. That was not the case with the Warren Sapp Bucks. It wasn't even the case with the Super Bowl champion Broncos in Peyton's last year. You needed dominant defensive performances. Now, their best path is the defense takeover a game, but it's not their only path. That's what I think people are going to find out this postseason. When C said they can go to Atlanta, in my mind, after the Saints, they are the second favorite, if such a thing exists. The Saints are the favorite. I think they're the second.
Because of their defense. Because we seem to go into every game with the Bears asking ourselves, well, which Mitch Trubisky are we going to get? The six touchdown guy or the somewhat ineffective?
It's better than the defense.
Because
it'd be like, okay, who would you rather have, Baltimore or Chicago?
Chicago.
And of course, because of their offense.
Yes.
Not just because of their defense, because Baltimore has great defense. Now, they don't have a Khalil Mack, but their offense and their ability to be explosive. Top 10 in scoring, that speaks for itself. Match with a historically great defense, that's enough to win you a Super Bowl.
There's a reason why this year every playoff game is a two-point spread or smaller, a coin flip game, except for this one, where they're nearly a touchdown favorite. They're six-point favorites. The Bears are a really, really good team. The Eagles are running into one of the best teams in the league in their first playoff game.
Oh, lucky for them. Gotta take a break. Coming up, is Deshaun Watson too much for the Colts to handle? That is next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're going viral. Earlier this week, Dwayne Haskins led the Ohio State Buckeyes to a 28-23 win over the Washington Huskies in the Rose Bowl. Our guy, Chris Carter, was there in person to experience the win. So tell us about your
trip. That
guy
coached me. Coach Hinton right there, he coached me. Coach Hinton last. I told him to hustle on out there. We had a great trip. That's my beautiful wife right there.
What up, baby Sue?
Okay, that's her nickname.
They figured that out. He said, that's my beautiful wife.
You're like, what up, baby Sue? It's just that's what they call her, so you don't, it's not a sign, it's not disrespectful. I just want to make, well, that, you know, if you're like, that's my wife, I'm like, what up, baby Danielle? you know.
But that's not her nickname.
I know, but people at home don't know that.
You know
I'm
helping
you.
They'd be like, hey, Freebird. Like, we have these little nicknames for people.
Right. So. I'm helping people at home.
You, that was super helpful.
Well, you know what? At this
see,
point,
see, how was your trip?
Grinded it into the ground.
Hey, man, you see, I'm had my baby out there. She had to be my wife.
You know what?
It was beautiful.
Great win for Ohio
State. Nothing like the granddaddy
of them all.
That is, I don't understand how the grass is so perfect. I don't get it.
Oh, this I checked it. I checked with the grass guys.
Would get
they
excited.
Grow these fields independently, and they pick it. That was no one had ever played on that field before the game. So specifically for that game, the grass was picked. Man, they got it, picked it up, took it over here. Didn't nobody smoke it in California? Placed it down there in Pasadena, and we played the game.
I don't know. Is there a more beautiful setting in sports than like sunset over the Rose Bowl? That field, that stadium. It's perfect.
No,
it's perfect.
Yeah, we should do a show from there.
Yeah, I know. You almost didn't get Chris back.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. The OKC Thunder were in LA.
Just so everyone knows, Thunder is the team's nickname. It's their nickname. Okay. She's not being disrespectful. You know it's not a weather situation. It's their nickname,
to
guys.
To help you.
Do you think we can call
someone
them
else's
Baby Thunder?
White baby. The Thunder, Baby Thunder, were in LA to face the Lakers. They're still without LeBron. Lakers.
Oh, I get it. She thought you were calling my wife Baby.
Baby.
Oh, man, you're
you
so corny.
See? No.
We got it.
Okay, I'll explain this again after this story. The Lakers were up 4 to begin the fourth quarter, but they still came up short, and they lost 107-100. Lakers now 1-3 without the King. CC, how concerning are the Lakers' struggles in the fourth quarter since LeBron James has been out?
I mean, Luke Walton talked about it earlier. LeBron James is one of the best closers, if not the best in the NBA now, that we've ever seen. So you expect him to do that. Now, it should be a little more emphasis on Ingram. Why wasn't he good there at the end? Because without Kuzman being there, without LeBron being there, without Rondo being there, I don't expect them to be great in the fourth quarter.
Listen, they've been bad at closing these games. Two of them, they've been up in the fourth quarter and lost. One, they were down only two in the heading into the fourth quarter, and they got blown out. Like, that's been a problem. The other maybe bigger problems, Kuzma's injury, and this team can't hit free throws. I mean, people can blame it on LeBron.
Oh, no, it's going to be
there.
A problem.
They were 59% from the line in this game. They're the 30th ranked free throw team in the league.
Yeah, they take their lead from LeBron.
Okay. Tough to close out games when you can't make free throws. So a lot of problems. I'm very curious to see what the MRI is going to reveal on Kuzma's back.
All right, sticking with the NBA, last night, Anthony Davis, his nickname is The Brow. Call him that. We're not being disrespectful. He was his usual awesome self, posting 34 points.
Baby Brow, if you're talking with me in the same conversation. Because his aren't as groomed as nice as mine.
Baby. However, the Pelicans still lost the game. Pellies are now 4-16 on the road this season. Get it together, Jenna. After the game, seemed Davis was extremely frustrated by all matters concerning the Pelicans. Mm-hmm. Nick, what do you make of all of this?
Man, if I'm Dell Demps and the New Orleans Pelicans, this is just about worst-case scenario for me. Anthony Davis is playing as well as he's ever played, and our team's as bad as it's been since he's been there. That ain't great when you're coming off the only postseason success you've ever had since he's been there. Alvin Gentry can say all he wants. We're not trading him. He might force their hand if they finish 13th in a 15-team conference at the end of this year.
It's bad news for them. Anthony Davis, I like how he spread around. He said everyone's not pleased with how we're playing. People in the NBA thought that they would struggle without Boogie Cousins. Lack of depth, lack of a bench. Nick, you've talked about that for a long time. It's just a matter of time. All right, before the superstar comes in, a lot of what we've seen the last 2 or 3 years in demanding, I'm not going to sign that extension, and they're going to have to trade him.
On to the NFL now. John Elway and the Broncos let go of their head coach, Vance Joseph, earlier this week. So their next coach will be the third in the last four seasons. And for the first time since the 70s, the Denver Broncos have posted back-to-back losing seasons. Nick, how do you evaluate Elway's tenure as the Broncos GM?
It's hard because he's been a GM for around a decade, and they've been to two Super Bowls. They won one of them. Ooh. So almost any team in football would take that resume.
Yes.
But you also understand that when I said earlier they lucked into Peyton Manning, here's what I mean. Peyton Manning wanted to go to Houston. Houston said no. So then he went to Denver.
Yes.
So now,
wasn't his first choice.
Wasn't his first choice. It wasn't like Peyton said, okay, this is where I have to go. And since Peyton, even when Peyton was there, they draft Brock Osweiler. That didn't work out. They draft Paxton Lynch. That doesn't work out. They give Case Keenum 2 years, $36 million. They got trouble getting out of it going into next year. That hasn't worked out. A Hall of Fame, all-time great quarterback has not been able to figure out his own position, and it's the coaches who keep paying the price for it.
Yeah, and because of his unique relationship with ownership, let's forget about what John did on the field. That stands on its own merit, one of the greatest careers. What he did in his first 5 years, that's what's got him these extra 5 years as a general manager. But it's on the board right now. I know their ownership is going through some things right now. But John Elway, his success as a general manager, we should begin to question, man, his decisions to hire a head coach and who he has playing quarterback. Two of the most important decisions a general manager has, he has not done well.
All right, the Giants finished this season a disappointing 5-11. Things aren't completely bleak, though. Saquon Barkley became the third rookie running back in NFL history to post 2,000 yards from scrimmage. However, the big question is, what's next for the quarterback, for Eli Manning? Here's what Giants general manager Dave Gettleman had to say.
I'm committed to making the best decision in the interest of the New York football Giants. That's what I'm committed to do. We're in the evaluation process, okay? I know that, you know, you guys want answers now, but very frankly, I didn't come in yesterday. So my commitment is to make this team the best team it can be. And if that happens to have Eli playing quarterback, it does. So we're going to look at film. We're going to evaluate everything. Everything's on the table for us.
All right, CeCe, this is the question that Giants fans are pondering right now and throughout this offseason. Mm-hmm. Should this team bring Eli Manning back?
Well, this is the decision. I'm not going to make that decision today because I don't have to make that decision. Right now, I need to look at all my options. I'm going to look at every quarterback potentially who can be a free agent. And also, if there's a quarterback under contract who I feel like I could trade for, potentially, what about Mullins in San Francisco? Are they going, you know, would they offer him up? Because, man, he's played some good football. Wouldn't cost you as much as getting a quarterback in the first round. So that draft capital can be utilized to help out the rest of this team. But Eli Manning is on the board that he could be the starting quarterback. I'm not going to make a decision today, the first week in January, when I don't have to, when there are so many options. Because I believe also Giants fans could be happy drafting the number one quarterback in college, which I believe to be Dwayne Haskins. I believe he is going to make an announcement in the next 48 hours, announcing he's coming out of college football after 50 touchdowns, 14 starts at Ohio State. And Eli Manning could be the starting quarterback, but the transition plan to Dwayne Haskins could be something, if I'm a Giants fan, something I could look forward to. A guy with a big-time arm who had 2 years of college left, not one, deciding to ease him into being a starter under Eli Manning, because I believe Eli to be one of the great gentlemen, a great mentor, and I believe that's something that he could embrace, and I believe it'd be something that would help out Dwayne Haskins in starting out his pro career.
Well, and that is, if Haskins is indeed declaring, and I have no reason to doubt what C's saying, a guy that only started 1 year of college football, you want him in a position where he doesn't have to start week one, where it's available to him, but it's not mandated, and where he has a guy to learn from, particularly if he's going to come into a market like New York, where Eli can teach him a lot of things, not just on how to play quarterback, but how to be the quarterback for the New York Giants and what that entails. I think Nick Mullins really interesting. Because people, I don't know how much they were watching the Niners either, but he, late in the year, he played very well on a team that never gave up on their season, played well at home. How much of that is Kyle Shanahan's offense? I don't know. But Nick Mullins showed me something. I'm going to mention another quarterback from a similar part of the country if we're talking trades. You guys know I think Derek Carr is going to be available. I wonder if that's something the Giants would do. Here's my concern for them if they don't go one of those routes. I don't think Dwayne Haskins is there at number six. So, like, they are going to have to figure out if they're not going to go free agency quarterback, and if they do want to start turning the page from Eli, is it worth moving up in the draft? Because either Oakland or...
So you think someone is going to move ahead of the Giants? Giants are six now.
Here's the draft. Arizona, they're not drafting a quarterback. Yep. San Francisco, they're not drafting. The Jets, they're not drafting. The Raiders could at four. The Bucks could at five. The Giants could at six. If I'm a team that needs a quarterback, I am absolutely considering calling up Arizona or San Francisco and saying, what will it take to move up? What will it take to move up and get Haskins? Because it's not like last year where it's Baker and Darnold and there's Lamar. Right. Some people like Rose. There is, to me, it's Haskins and then an enormous drop-off. But what I did think was interesting from Gettleman, Jenna, is he was unequivocal on Odell. He said, we did not sign Odell to trade him. He didn't say, listen, it's early, all our options. He was unequivocal on that. He, for the first time in his tenure, was equivocal on Eli. We'll see. That puts Eli in a different position headed into this year, this coming year, than he was heading into this past
year. Just out of curiosity, other free agent options, is everything open? Guys like Teddy Bridgewater, Tyrod Taylor, are there other guys out there that you would even consider? You said mentioned Carr. I'm just, what
Teddy
the
Bridgewater,
look like?
And besides pulling off some type of trade, there's not guys that I see as potential. Tyrod, to me, is not the face of the New York football Giants. That means they're going laterally compared to moving back to where they want to be in the playoffs. So I believe those few names right there will be part of the conversation.
All right, let's move on to the Houston Texans. They got big weekend plans. They're going to face division rival Indianapolis on Sunday. A lot of people surprised they're even here, given the way they started their season, losing their first three games. They bounced back. They won 9 games in a row. They claim the AFC South, and they finished the season at 11-5. It's been quite a journey for this team and for Deshaun Watson, who missed all but 6 games last season. Here's more from the Texans quarterback.
Just look at the season, starting 0-3, you know, and then, you know, tacking on 9 and winning out, what, 10 of the last 12. I mean, it's everything we earned. We earned the right to be here. We earned the right to do it, you know, do what we did Sunday and be champs in the division. But, you know, it's a new year, new season, and, you know, we got to start over and try to be 1-0 this week and try to continue it. Played in a lot of big games before, you know, in college and stuff, but, I mean, you can't really, you know, pick college playoffs with the NFL. This is, you know, the hardest business, you know, top-notch. It's a whole new season, whole new you know, speed of game. So it's going to be, you know, new for me, of course, because it's my first one, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, Nick, so the Texans did what they had to do despite a very slow start to earn the spot that they're in right now. Why do we keep talking about whether this team warrants the respect that maybe some of the other playoff teams have?
Because of all the teams in the playoffs, they have as glaring of a weakness as anybody. For them, it's their offensive line. To me, that's neck and neck with the Chiefs' overall defense. For everybody knows this is a weakness. They do not have a solution for it. It has been the only thing that's been holding them back all year. But then they have additional question marks, I think, from a lot of people on a head coach standpoint and on an experience standpoint. And for all those reasons, and given the fact they are playing a team that over the last 10 weeks in Indianapolis has been as good as any team in football, not just in record, but in offensive ranking, defensive ranking, in every metric, and a team that just beat them in a very critical game that cost the Texans the 2 seed, that allowed the Colts to stay alive for the division and then end up getting into the playoffs. For all those reasons, people think Indy can win this game. But I was really pleased with what Deshaun said there, because Deshaun's in a very unique position. He's the first pro quarterback to have had a lot of playoff experience in college. College football playoffs, new. We haven't had it many years, and Alabama's quarterbacks aren't playing in the NFL. So Deshaun, it would have been easy for him to say, hey, listen, this is my first NFL playoff game. It's not my first playoff game. I've even been to 2 college football playoff semifinals, been to 2 national championships. I know what playoff pressure is like, but he knows that's not the case. He knows that whatever he experienced, even against Alabama, that this is a different ball game for him. And it would have been, the question was setting him up to say, oh, I've played in these types of games before. And he knows better than that. And that was, to me, very telling, that even a guy with his level of big game college experience, more than any player in these playoffs, he knows, but that really doesn't matter that much come this Saturday.
Yeah, I'm not surprised he said that, because all the players, all the coaches, everyone surrounding the team, let the players know they don't know what they're getting ready to experience. So don't act like you know how you're preparing. Don't act like you know what the intensity is. You don't. And the veteran players, which they have there, they have 26 players that have played in 87 games. And those players are the ones they're leaning on for that experience, because the tempo, turnovers, the momentum, playing to the home crowd. I remember Denny Green telling myself and Randy Moss, we're playing at home. We need y'all to make some big plays early to get the crowd involved. Denny had never told me that. I was like, Denny, that's normally my program. That's what I like to do. But when you're playing at home, understanding that and not allowing the game just to, oh, I'm going to fill out the game. No, when you're playing at home, you want to try to create that momentum for yourself. When you're playing on the road, you play a little more conservative, not wanting to make a mistake. So I'm looking forward to him playing. I'm looking forward to seeing how does he utilize his legs? Because I believe in the critical situation, third down, he can't sit back there and get those 60 sacks, which he did during the regular season, highest in the NFL. I believe his ability to run. Also in the red zone, he's got to be able to utilize his legs a lot like he did in college. I'm looking forward to seeing because there's a lot of pressure in the playoffs and seeing how people respond to that pressure. That's how you create a legacy for yourself.
And one guy that we talk a lot about on this show, but I don't think gets much national attention aside from really this show, is DeAndre Hopkins. People say, oh yeah, he's a very good receiver. People, I think Chris, because of the relationship with him and because he has such respect for the hands that he has, we put a little closer spotlight on him. He has 115 catches this year with zero drops. That seems impossible. I'm sure you're going to tell me it's not, but it seems it's a remarkable number.
Yeah, I have to watch those numbers. It seems impossible.
Okay, so you agree with me that those numbers feel a little fudged, but that's what the NFL, I think it was Next Gen Stats released yesterday. Whatever it is, he is having a spectacular season. This could be a bit of a coming out party nationally for DeAndre.
And for a long time, people said I had the best hands in the business. And Larry Fitzgerald, he seemed to take that over as having the best hands in the business. And now DeAndre Hopkins has taken that over from Larry Fitzgerald as having the best hands in the NFL.
Nice. All right, take a break. Coming up, can Dak Prescott carry the momentum into the playoffs? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a big showdown as Dallas and Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Dallas Cowboys. That got messed up in my head. It is the NFC wild card game. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, I'm being honest. 4:30 Pacific Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Autocorrect.
Should be a great game, no matter who's playing.
Chick-a-chick-chick-chick-chick-chick. Autocorrect. Coach Mangini back with us. Help break it all down. In a meaningless last game of the regular season, Coach, Dak Prescott was good. 4 touchdown passes and a win over the Giants. Now, if he could play 17 meaningless games against the Giants, he'd be money. Instead, he'll try to capitalize on that momentum as the Cowboys face the Seahawks Saturday night on Fox. Here's Jason Garrett on if Dak can build off last weekend's game.
Yeah, I do. But I do believe momentum is earned in life and in football. And you earn it by continuing doing the things the right way. And, you know, certainly a very good performance by Dak in our passing game the other day against the Giants. But you have to go earn it again. You have to earn it on the practice field, and you have to earn it throughout the next ball game.
All right, Coach, we know exactly what this Cowboys offense needs and will most likely get from Ezekiel Elliott. But what can they get and what can they expect from Dak Prescott going into this Seattle game?
Well, this has to be a tough time for Dak Prescott. A few years ago, he pushes Tony Romo out with his performance. He's the it guy. Everybody thinks that it's just going to keep trending upwards. Mm. You know, you go to last week, his running back is on the sidelines, but yet he's playing the full game. And people are talking about whether or not he could lose the game as opposed to him being able to win the game. So there's a real ego component to this, and I think the important thing for him is to go in and not try to prove people wrong, not try to make this about, look, I can win this game with the things that I do mm-hmm. in the passing game. I think they have to stay with their plan of running the ball effectively, and then take those shots that are there and make really good decisions and get over any tendency that you might have to want to show people what you can do. You know, I really like the fact that they've incorporated the tight end so much more into this offense.
In the last month, yes.
And it's been huge for him. Mm-hmm. So following the formula and the game plan that's got him to this point and not letting that desire to prove people wrong overtake yourself and make bad decisions.
You said we know what we're going to get from Ezekiel Elliott in this game. I can't have that as a given because we know that Seattle's number one prerogative in this football game is going to be stopping Ezekiel Elliott, going to be make Dallas beat us, with their passing attack. You talked earlier, C, about Seattle's coverage, that they're either in a cover three or a cover one, that for a wide receiver, these are favorable coverages where you're not going to necessarily have to deal with safety help immediately, that if you can beat your man. Seattle, I believe, they are going to give Dak looks and the Dallas offensive coordinator looks where they're saying, we dare you to pass it. Come on. It's right there for you. You got Amari Cooper. You got Dak Prescott. Pass the ball. And they are going to spend the lion's share of their effort in making sure Zeke doesn't do what he's done over these last 2 months, which is be the most productive non-quarterback in football. What Zeke's been on this winning streak when they won 7 of 8, 6 of 7 with him, he's averaging 160 yards from scrimmage on 29 touches per game. So if he does that, Dallas should win, but Seattle's entire game plan is making sure he can't do that, and that's where the question marks about Dak are real. That because if the Cowboys can play Seattle to a draw in the passing game, Dallas should win. Dallas has home field. They have the better running game, even if Seattle is a great rushing attack. If they can play the passing game to a draw, I think they should win the game. But I don't know that I believe they can play Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett to a draw on Saturday night.
Yeah, the thing that concerns me is in these playoff games, you try to remain calm and remain cool, but you know that clock is ticking. You are under the urgency. So I don't believe in momentum from week number 17 where you're going to be in the playoffs no matter what. The game plan that they had in week number 17 is not a game plan that they can carry over to the playoff because they allowed Dak to take all types of chances. On the touchdown to the tight end, the tight end made a couple guys miss, but Dak is running to his right, throws back across his body. That's not something they're going to tolerate in a winner-takes-all type of matchup. So for me, trying to rush and do too many things, as you said, trying to win the game. That's the number one stat that these quarterbacks have to be involved in. We got a lot of quarterbacks that got limited experience, and in doing that, you can rush in the playoffs. That's what I have seen. I played with Randall Cunningham when he hadn't won a playoff game for a long, long time. And you could see that in the game, as the game went on, that we have less patience because they haven't had success in the playoffs and the pressure of the playoffs.
When Adrian Peterson was at his best, I remember watching the games against Green Bay where they'd have 10 guys in the box and they'd hand the ball off to him on a power and he'd still figure out a way to get 20 yards. And look, the great running backs are able to do that. Even though you've got a hat for a hat and a number for a number, sometimes your X is better than their O. And for Ezekiel Elliott, that X is better than a lot of people's O's. So you got to keep giving him the ball. And I worry a little bit about that with Dallas because we saw them trying to find their way early in the season. Are they going to have the commitment that you see from Seattle?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Seattle's willing to keep handing the ball off until 2.9 yards, doesn't matter. Hand the ball off and it sets everything else up. So will Dallas have that same patience in this game?
I'm very curious because yesterday you said what you would wish for any team going in the playoffs is to play loose. Right, that you said that one of the toughest things is that guys get too uptight in the playoffs. And what Dallas had going for them in week 17 is they were, I don't know if you used the word loose or
I don't think I said loose.
Maybe loose is the wrong word, but you remember the conversation I'm talking about. That they play with freedom almost and to not, and what you're talking about, C, is in the playoffs, that's the hardest thing to do and you're almost not allowed to do it.
So that's always people who aren't playing. Oh, I want to play loose. Yeah, and you know that clock is ticking. You know that basically, whatever legacy, whatever dreams and aspirations the team have, it all relies on that game. So it's hard to impossible to remain cool and calm.
And the problem with last week is Seattle's defense can have a little bit different intensity than the Giants'
of
defense
course.
Did.
Yeah, I think the only comparison between Seattle's defense and the defense and the Giants' defense they face is they got 11 guys on the field. The only similarities to it.
And the problem you can get into is some of the things that worked last week, you may think, oh, that'll work. That was a really good concept. That was a really good idea. Yeah, but those windows close totally differently now than they did.
But is there something to the fact that he was so successful because they opened things up for him and they let him take more chances as opposed to trying to control exactly what he's doing all the time? Is that... there's no correlation there?
No correlation to me because Ezekiel Elliott's not playing. The offensive line is not there. You know you're going into this game trying to experiment. When they get there, you know it starts with that tailback back there and that offensive line. You know you're going against a ball control and a quarterback that is as good as any quarterback in the clutch. So all those things are taken into consideration when you're calling plays and you're trying to chart up a game plan to beat Seattle.
And what's going to be so interesting about this game, with everybody running the ball so much, it's going to be a short game. There might be not a lot of possessions for you to put points on the board. So that'd be interesting to see how that works out.
I was like, all the games are the same amount of time, but we
got two running teams.
Just press that auto delete button.
Got it. Okay. Coach, stick around. Coming up, can the Eagles recreate their Super Bowl magic?
Didn't mean to correct that.
Mental note, wasn't as funny when I said it as it was in my head. We'll hear it from Doug Peterson next on First Things First.
Wasn't as funny when I said it as it was in my head. The Jenna Wolf story.
Oh, my God.
That and 3 a.m.
Yeah. Oh, man.
On Saturday, it's a Big Ten showdown on Fox as number 8 Michigan State hits the hardwood against conference foe Ohio State. Catch it all 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
You win no matter what in this game, see?
No, I don't win if Michigan State wins, fool.
What about Izzo?
Man, I don't care nothing about Izzo. He's playing against my school. What's wrong with you?
Okay.
Lupe, we coming for you.
Oh, my God.
Lupe.
Poor Lupe right now is eating breakfast at home. She almost knocked over.
Yeah, she knows.
That's
and she married Izzo. She's a competitor.
Yeah.
That's where he gets his edge from.
Baby Lupe.
My God.
Coach Mancini's back with
that
us.
That Rose Bowl has got the Ohio State
think you
blood
know me.
To
no, man, this is who I am.
You think you know
oh,
me.
It's going to be a great win. Go home with
sound
that.
Sound like my wife. You don't know me.
Thank you.
The Eagles' road to repeating continues Sunday against the Chicago Bears. It's funny if you think about it. Same quarterback as last season. Same doubt from skeptics as last season. But a little more of a challenge this time around as the Eagles are the number 6 overall seed, as opposed to being the 1 seed last year. See, 1 seed is better than 6 seed. Doug Peterson spoke on his team's challenges entering the postseason.
It does give you a little, you know, comfort knowing that we've kind of went through this grind and you know, we're here now. And you just, you know, we have to continue to grind and continue to work. But, you know, I don't think it's any easier. It's a different team again, different set of, you know, circumstances. We have to travel. If we're fortunate to win, we got to be on the road again. And, you know, so it feels different, but the excitement is the same. And that's what I think the energy, you know, feeds the building because of that.
All right, Coach, two coaches who know each other very well, Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy. What are the Eagles going to have to do to pull off the upset against Chicago?
Well, this to me is one of the most interesting games. And I told you guys after we won the first Super Bowl in New England, we were eliminated the next season with exactly the same record as the Eagles had and almost the same type of journey. And when we talked about it in the preseason, it wasn't an easy year. We had to adjust to everybody coming after us, and there were ups and downs. But at the end of the season, we were playing well. And we had to win our last game, which we did, and we needed help from another team, but they didn't help us. So we were in the same situation.
Same situation, but it was as if the Vikings had won this week.
Right. So, but I felt strongly that if we had the opportunity to be in the playoffs that year, we could have made a lot of noise because we had found out who we were. We found out what we had to do to win. We had gotten through all that adversity. We had the experience from the previous year. There was an element of, and to me, that's important because you understand the intensity of the playoffs. So Philadelphia is in a great position in my mind, and I'm really interested to see what they can do with this opportunity now that they made it into the show.
So you and I were talking about this yesterday, and I thought it was really fascinating that because we have brought up a lot of times the 0-2 Pats in comparison to the 2018 Eagles, and it looked for a long time like the most glaring similarity was going to be won their first Super Bowl and then missed the playoffs the last year. But the Eagles snuck in. The Eagles snuck in playing their best football of the year. And it's not just, by the way, the 3 Nick Foles games. They've won 5 of 6. Like, it was the 3 games prior to Nick Foles taking over, including a Cowboys game that they lost. But that was the overtime game that they were maybe a tipped pass away from winning that game and having a chance to win that division. So I think the Eagles are dangerous. I think the Eagles are playing more like the Eagles than they have at any point all year. The defensive line is playing its best football. Fletcher Cox coming off just his second career Defensive Player of the Week award. The offensive line and Lane Johnson. Lane Johnson seemed to play like a Pro Bowler the moment he found out he didn't make the Pro Bowl this year for the first time all year. I just think they're running up against a team that is right now one of the four best teams in the whole sport. I think Chicago is a very tough matchup for anyone. I think it's a particularly tough matchup for Philadelphia because they can, yes, they have a great defense, but they also can exploit a weakened secondary with speed. And we know the Eagles last year and this year, the biggest weakness on the team was the secondary.
But the thing the Eagles do have going for them is that this is a Bears team. Yes, they're that good and they're that hot. But they don't have a lot of postseason experience, if at all.
I haven't heard anyone talk about that. The Eagles, we know that they have experience from last year, but they got 35 players that have played a combined 171 games. And it's always the person, the short person, that thinks height's not important. The slow person, like myself, said speed is overrated. I didn't mention you and everything. And the Nick, for instance, the guy that didn't play the game, oh, that's overrated. So we all have a little corner in this. But experience in the playoffs, it does matter. It's the biggest thing that I worry about in this Bears team facing this Eagles team. Now, the thing that I think that helps out, when you have the type of front seven and it's sick 'em, go get 'em, you don't need that much experience in a playoff game. So I look forward to the Eagles, especially at the beginning of the game. Do they get off to a good, fast start, which veteran teams typically can calm it down in a hostile environment? So for me, that's one of the things, Jen, I think that's a great observation, the lack of experience by the Bears and tremendous experience coupled with barely getting in and being tested the last few weeks
of the
season.
Just real quick, because you made fun of me instead of finishing your stat. The Eagles have 35 players who have played 171 playoff games.
Yes.
What are the Bears' numbers?
Bears, 13 players played 44 games. Jenna, that's the thing that Jenna's looking at this weekend. Man, they got no experience, even though they're an exciting, very, very dangerous team.
And what you try to explain to players is that the level in preseason, and then that ramps up in the regular season.
Yes.
And then it ramps up again in the playoffs. But you don't really understand what that feels like until you actually go through it. And some guys adjust to it really well, and other guys, it's a little bit overwhelming.
And tell me if I have this right. Because we hear guys, especially a team like the Eagles, that had to win their final three games, and they're not the only team in this situation, say, oh, well, we've been playing playoff games for a month. I've never thought that's exactly right, because just because for your team it had the importance of a playoff game doesn't mean the opponent did. It doesn't mean you've been in a playoff atmosphere for a month, because unless it was Colts-Titans week 17 where both teams are playing for the final playoff spot, you're not going to have the requisite attention from your or intensity from your opponent that a playoff game would, right?
Well, I feel like Dallas has been saying that for 3 months, like they're playing for a playoff game. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where they beat two pretty good teams, right? Mm-hmm. Beat the Rams, they beat the Texans.
Philly did, yes, absolutely.
And they also played a close game against, so two playoff teams, and then the game against Dallas. They played, they had to go the hard way at the end there, and they put themselves in that position. But there is some value to that.
And what is that environment like? I mean, I know on the field what it means and all the pressure that comes with it. But there's obviously more reporters there. There's more scrutiny. There's more. It's a national game. There's much more attention. As a player going through that, how is that atmosphere different than a regular week of an important game?
Everything's heightened. The schedule is exactly the same. Players are a creature of habit, so you do have the media. Even though there's more media there, you don't allow the media. You have the same number of sessions. So you make sure that guys attend their media sessions. The practices are far more intense, and it's real discussion. If we lose this, man, we are going home. And I'm sure the Bears have Super Bowl aspirations. I'm sure the Eagles have Super Bowl aspirations. So the game plan, if you third down, say we have 8 third down calls. It is the best 8 calls based on the stats of what they might play and the things that we do well. So you are trying to pull out every stop to give you an advantage in this one time winner takes all. So it is a different environment. And that experience does play a part, because typically the coaching staffs, they tell you, hey, I want your veteran guy or the one guy in your room. And typically, like the Eagles do, they have a guy in every room that's had playoff experience. The Bears don't have that. So how does that play out throughout the roster? I believe it affects the team. And, Coach, you've seen where you have that veteran leadership in each one of those rooms. It helps the coach's message go throughout the team.
Yeah, it's huge. And the playoffs is such a pleasure to coach in, because everybody is working as hard as they possibly can be. The attention level is fantastic. Those things are great. But even things like tickets, family coming into town, all the distractions that come with the playoffs, too, to have a veteran guy in the room and say, look, take care of that later. Mm-hmm. Let's focus on what we need to focus on and getting everybody back to the mission as opposed to all this noise that's suddenly infused in the locker room.
The Eagles have known for a couple weeks if they get in, it would be as the sixth seed. And we've all known for at least the last 2 weeks that the overwhelming likelihood three seed was going to be the Bears. Have there been people on the Eagles coaching staff that started the scouting report on the Bears a week and a half ago before they were even in? Or did they have to do all hands on deck just to get in? Because they knew they were in a unique position. They knew what the matchup would be.
Look, it was survival mode, but you always are going to have somebody.
Yeah, advanced scouting. They have people in the department that go ahead, not necessarily the coaching staff, but you have people that have a game plan ready. Say if Chicago falls out of the three, so you have a couple that you have done the due diligence on any team that you might
face. Yeah, the groundwork is being laid out.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.